Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Naughton. I'd like to welcome you to the Progressive Commentary Hour, the most popular radio program that we do and the most downloaded radio program that we're aware of in the United States. We take on one theme. We do it in depth, and we bring a sense of scholarship and objectivity to it that the mainstream media simply is lacking. Today, the question, Big Food, Monsanto, genetically modified organisms and the threat to the American farming system. My guest will be Ronnie Cummins. Ronnie is executive director of the Organic Consumers Association and author of Genetically Engineered Foods, a self-defense guide for consumers. With over 800,000 members, the association is a nonprofit interest organization campaigning for sustainable health and justice on critical issues of food safety and industrial agriculture and genetic engineering, and fair trade and environmental sustainability. He's been a lifelong activist in the human rights and anti-nuclear and labor and agricultural movements. In the 1990s, he worked closely with futurist and activist Jeremy Rifkin, who we've had on this program, on economic trends and Rifkin's Beyond Beef campaign. His current goal through the association is to increase organic agriculture to at least 30% by 2015. His website is organicconsumers.org. He will be joined by David Murray. David is the founder and executive director. David is the founder and executive director of Food Democracy Now. That's a grassroots movement of more than 250,000 American farmers and citizens dedicated to reforming our food and agriculture. He's been called the most crucial and politically savvy actor in the ongoing efforts to help move American agriculture into the 21st century. As a result of his Sustainable Dozen campaign, which resulted in four candidates being placed in high-level positions in the USDA. In 2007, David organized the Food and Family Farm Presidential Summit, where five of the six Democratic candidates pledged their support to help save family farms and laid out their plans to create a more sustainable future for rural America. We'll talk to him about that, and if Barack Obama, at that time, was one of the people who made that pledge. His website is fooddemocracynow.org. I'd like to welcome both David and Ronnie to the program. Nice to have you with us.
Hey, Gary, great to be on.
Good. Since we take our time on this program, there are no commercials. I like to lay things out so that we're given almost a classroom on the air, where I lay out the larger picture and then go quiet and ask each of you to respond in depth. No need for short answers here, okay? Last evening, after I finished my program, I watched a film, and it was called Fresh. It's a new documentary, well made, that I would recommend people watch. In it, they simply look at the high level of consumption of processed foods at the fast food joints in America. And then they looked at factory farming, the gigantic chicken houses with 50,000 chickens and pig farms with 50,000 pigs, and how they're treated, how they're fed, and a list of the drugs that they're given. Then they gave you a corresponding look at organically raised chickens, beef, pigs, and what a difference it was. Now, I'm a vegan, but I believe that this information is still very important because most people are not going to go vegan. They're going to go at best transitional. They may give up beef for chicken or chicken for fish. It takes a long time for most people to make that jump. And I believe that we have to be both compassionate, sensitive to people's living environments and their belief systems. And so therefore, this would be a film that would at least allow people who are going to eat a hamburger to know, here's one hamburger, here's where it comes from, and here's another hamburger, and here's where it comes from. So if you're going to eat a hamburger, which would you choose to eat? And I think it made a very compelling argument about the importance of grass-raised animals and no drugs. The economics also was startling. The organic beef farmer showed that he has chickens that follow the cattle and eat the parasites that otherwise would be infecting the cattle, and give manure to the land and eat insects, and how the cattle are taken from pasture to pasture, and how they get healthy, and how he makes $3,000 an acre, whereas on the conventional side of that, he'd be making $300 an acre, which then puts the lie to the idea that going organic and going natural is not economical. Now, that was that film. There have been seven other films in the last 3 years, like Forks Over Knives, which was very good, The Future of Food, talking about our food, where it comes from. And I want us to take that theme further on this program. I'm going to start with you, Ronnie, and here is the bigger picture from my perspective. And then take this, take your time, and give us your ideas. I believe that the average American not only doesn't know where their food comes from, but couldn't distinguish a genetically engineered food from a non-genetically engineered food, and doesn't buy organic food, and is going to eat junk food no matter what. However, there's also about 40% of the American population who are trying to make healthier choices. And if you gave them a choice of eating something that's genetically engineered or not eating something, they more often than not would not buy the genetically engineered. So then why, if genetic engineering is arguing that we need genetic engineering to feed the masses, that it's economical, far more so than organic or what we call sustainable farming, and why not label it? Why not have everything in a restaurant on a menu that is genetically engineered or not? If they don't have a fear of failing, then they shouldn't be concerned, but they are. I'd like for you to address that. I'd also like for you to address the idea that Big Agra has virtually taken over the farm policy in the United States, and they're doing so at an extremely rapid pace. I'd like for you to address the food safety bill. Who does it really protect? And what would this do to agriculture and the small, sustainable, organic farmers we know them today? I'd like for you to also address the idea that in a country that prides itself on being able to have access to all the best information, why would the President of the United States surround himself by pro-genetically modified organism people like Michael Taylor or Vilsack? With all the information available, why doesn't he bring in people who have long-time histories with organic and show what organic could do? I'd like for you to address those, if you would, please.
Certainly. Well, the first point about why isn't genetically engineered food labeled in the United States and Canada, among other places, when it is labeled in 50 different countries of the world, including every nation in the European Union, all 27 of them. I think this goes back to the very beginning of gene splicing foreign DNA into food products and genetically engineering animal drugs. The USDA started doing polling as early as the mid-1980s because they knew that eventually bovine growth hormone and some of these other products were going to come on the market. And every poll they ever did showed that, yeah, the majority of the public didn't exactly know what genetic engineering was, but they were suspicious of it, and they wanted labels. And a certain percentage always said that they did not like this technology, and they didn't want it. So it was not until 9 years later, 1994, that the first genetically engineered food additive or animal drug, bovine growth hormone, Monsanto's, came on the market. And by then, the FDA had ruled, just about 20 years ago, May 26, 1992, the FDA had ruled that genetically engineered foods, they said, are substantially equivalent to non-genetically engineered foods, and therefore would not need to be labeled. And the guy who provided leadership for this FDA regulation was none other than Michael Taylor, who was previously an attorney that had worked for Monsanto. And so they knew from the beginning that the public was concerned and wary of this technology. The public never really saw much of a possible benefit for themselves, and so they would, if it were labeled, millions of people would not buy it. And of course, if millions of people were not going to buy it, supermarkets wouldn't sell it, and if supermarkets wouldn't sell it, farmers wouldn't grow it. So it was necessary for them to force this technology literally down the throats of the American public in order for it to succeed. And we're still living under this regime of, authoritarian control over our desire to know what's happened to our food. What's in it? Has it been genetically engineered? So that's the first part of this. You also ask about the increasing control of corporate agribusiness. This whole complex of chemical, biotechnology, pesticide, animal drug corporations allied with big monopoly wholesalers of grains and vegetables and the whole food chain, Food Inc., as it was termed in the celebrated movie. Unfortunately, the stranglehold of corporate agribusiness and the biotech companies like Monsanto seems to be increasing all the time. Even though the public are more and more concerned about food safety, they're more and more concerned about environmental sustainability and issues directly related like the climate crisis, industry is not giving an inch. In fact, they are, launching an all-out assault on small farmers and local food systems, distributing products that they don't like raw milk or vegetables and produce produced locally and sold locally. They are cracking down on the entire local organic food system in the U.S., and they are winning in court. They have prevented any significant legislation from passing at the federal level. And if you look at most state legislatures, they're in control in state legislatures also. I mean, these recent laws, including in Iowa, where you're not even allowed to film inside of a factory farm, are just the latest manifestation of this increasing control. And it does not appear like they intend to change this anytime soon, which is why activists have decided that we need to look for new ways to change public policy and to change the dynamics of the marketplace. We've decided to build massive organizations and massive coalitions and go after corporate agribusiness and the biotechnology industry where they are the weakest. And in the case of labeling genetically engineered food, after over a fruitless decade of trying to pass any legislation at the federal level, after petitioning the FDA, after fighting every new crop that's approved through the EPA or USDA or FDA, a group of us finally decided that we had to go for the very difficult route of putting a law on the ballot in California utilizing the initiative process. We call this direct democracy, and it's a remnant of the last mass movement in the 19th century that tried to get big corporations and agribusiness under control, and they won these important reforms at the end of the most of them at the end of the 19th century, early 20th century. One of these was the ability for citizens to sign petitions, put a law on the ballot, and pass it into law. And that's what we're going to do in California, November 6th. We're just about to turn in 850,000 signatures of registered voters in California. This will automatically put us on the ballot on November 6th. Polls are showing 80 to 90% of Californians want mandatory labeling. We're literally going to vote it into law. This doesn't mean we're not trying to lobby elected public officials in places like Vermont and Connecticut, where their legislatures are currently debating laws that have very similar wording to the California Ballot Initiative. It just means that we no longer have much faith in the democratic process, except these tools where the citizens can enact laws directly, or where, you know, the recall, where we can fire elected political officials directly, as the folks are trying to do in Wisconsin with Governor Scott Walker. So, but looking beyond just labeling, we do have a lot of direct democracy tools left in our toolbox that we can utilize next year and into the future. One of these was demonstrated in the year 2004 in California, when four different counties — there's 58 counties in California — but four different counties, including some important agricultural counties, banned the growing of genetically engineered crops. So there have not been any other county successes since 2004, but I think we're ready for that. And if city councils and county boards will not pass bans on GMOs, then in about 1,000 counties in the United States, out of, I think there's 3,260 counties, we have the ability to collect petition signatures of registered voters in that county and force these measures onto the ballot. So that's what we intend to do. We are looking across the country, and we're seeing that the federal government is, you know, totally supporting factory farms, and yet, however, citizens have banded together in certain local areas and banned these CAFOs, or concentrated animal feeding operations. Again, if the politicians don't have the courage to stand up to corporate agribusiness, let's take action in those counties where we still have the ability to put our own laws on the ballot and pass them, and let's deal with CAFOs. Similar battles are taking place across the country, especially at the local level, rejecting this outrageous practice. It's banned in organics, but it's common in chemical farming, of putting toxic municipal sewage sludge on farmland. Again, it's, the federal government is doing nothing about this. In fact, they're aiding and abetting the sludge haulers and the sludge spreaders. Synagro is the leading corporate company in the sludge business. They're owned by the Carlyle Group, the infamous war profiteers. In any case, federal government's not doing anything. State governments, for the most part, are not doing anything. But people on the local area are doing something. And we need to spread this movement, spread the idea that even if Washington is completely under the control of the big corporations, we still have some tools left that we can use at the city and county level, and to some extent at the state level. I spoke earlier about the stranglehold the corporate agribusiness is exercising over the food and farming system, and the assault on raw milk distribution and distribution of organic vegetables organic processed foods in local areas. Well, certain started in Maine. Some townships have passed what they call food sovereignty laws, and these local ordinances basically say that the national so-called Food Safety Modernization Act does not apply in their local jurisdiction, and that farmers and consumers have a right to freely distribute, produce raw foods and other products of their choosing. So this is another path. It obviously is not going to work unless we continue our massive efforts to educate the public, and unless we continue our efforts to go into the courts and sue Monsanto and these other corporations, It's not going to succeed unless we're willing to get out and protest, out in front of the FDA, out in front of corporate offices. We're going to have to be able to boycott products. But if we utilize all these tools together, I believe we can have some major breakthroughs in the next 12 months in terms of passing the kind of laws we want at the local and county level, and then there are a few states where it's possible to actually put things on the ballot and pass things at the state level.
Okay.
So I think the darkest hour always comes before the dawn, and we're going through that darkest era now, but there are major signs that the public are sick and tired. The 99%, as the Occupy Wall Street movement puts it, are organizing ourselves to take back the power that's been usurped by this elite, this 1%, the 1,000 corporations across the world that do $1 billion or more in business.
Good. Ronnie, please stay on the line. Ronnie is speaking to us from Mexico on a cell phone. That's why some of the technical difficulty. I'm going to invite David to join this discussion now. David, I believe that we have probably in the neighborhood of around 10% of the American population that actually supports the organic movement. I believe that at least 50% of the American population, no matter what facts they're given, are so disconnected from their own lives, from the reality of their own existence, that they're indifferent. They could care less. They don't talk about and address fascism, the erosion of their constitutional rights. They don't address something that Ronnie alluded to, and that is that now if you take a camera onto a factory farm and show animals being abused, which is against the law, you then are labeled as a terrorist, and you can then be arrested under the Patriot Act and under terrorism laws and Homeland Security laws for doing nothing more than showing how bad a situation is. And yet the American public, the vast majority, are completely indifferent to any fascism, and they're lazy, they're stupid on so many levels. So I will not intellectually align myself, and I want to make it very clear and unequivocal, this whole notion that there's 99% of sleeping on the side of the angels and 1% are evil just doesn't wash in the world I live in. I have to live in the nuts and bolts world of who's actually showing up, who's caring, whose kid's obese, what food are they eating, do they care what food they're eating, would they change if you gave them an opportunity, do they care who's in the White House, do they care how their lives manipulated, do they care what laws are being taken away, do they care about anything except who's going to be on Dancing with the Stars, Donald Trump, or some other supercilious and irrelevant information. That said, I would like for you to address the idea that we as an entire nation, our body politic, the media, have been repeatedly manipulated and lied to by Monsanto and the others, promoting the idea that without them, we and many people in the world will suffer, that they should use their herbicides, they have a right to genetically manipulate life, and we're not looking at the downside. What happens if Ronnie, who said that, you know, it's darkest before, you know, the light. What if we don't have a light? What if they win? What if they're so clever as they've been up to this point with unlimited amounts of resources and legislators and politicians and people in positions of influence in the media and all the universities who they control so many of the lectures and because they fund different departments and the think tanks they can get the people on television. And so you see people coming from the same pro-genetic engineering debating amongst themselves, one being a little bit more moderate, the other being a little less. And so we think that's the debate, and all the while being taken right down the road to everything genetic engineering, and then passing laws that if you try to protest, if you try to argue it, you're now on someone's watch list, and then they're going after the small and organic farmer. I'm a certified organic farmer. I had the first research organic farm in New York State at the Fertiller Farm in 1970. So I've been in this a long time. I've seen everything that goes on, and I don't have an optimistic picture in my head right now of what's going to happen unless we really become involved. Maybe 10%. But 10% of Americans is still 30 million people. You get 30 million people in alignment, the empowered minority can turn this around. But the majority are not going to do anything. I'd like your thoughts on all this, please.
Sure. Well, one, thank you very much for having me on the show. I've been a big fan of yours for years, so it's really an honor to be on here, especially with Ronnie Cummings, who's been an inspiration for a lot of people, fighting against Monsanto's corporate power and also promoting organic agriculture and, the consumption of organic food. I would say, I always try to remain optimistic in this battle. It is easy when you're on the front line of a political and a social struggle to either be cynical or to interpret the events of the day in a negative way. And I would just say, from my perspective, I live in Iowa. I live in the belly of the beast. When they passed that ag-gag bill this year, they almost tried to pass it last year, but they didn't. And they had to strip a lot of really ugly, really anti-constitutional, anti-basic free speech rights provisions out of that bill. But I think it's a sign. Fundamentally, I think their actions is a sign of their weakness. It's a strategic overreach, which every time they do this thing exposes the corruption of their practices and the deplorable practices of, family, factory farm, raising animals in a factory farm, or, GM Monsanto's bullying farmers in patent litigation lawsuits. I think that what that does, the American people, I fundamentally believe, whether they're currently as educated, as involved as we'd like them to be, I think they fundamentally have a sense of fairness, of right and wrong. And I think it's our job, as my job as an organizer, and as someone who cares about these issues, to try to awaken them and try to educate them. Food Democracy Now was started 3.5 years ago. It was right after the election of Senator Obama. President Obama became the president. I have to tell you, I'm a former conservative Republican. I grew up in northwestern Iowa, a very conservative part of the state, was raised in an evangelical home. So when you look at the politics out there and you see Rick Santorum and Newt Gingrich speaking, I understand the code of what they're speaking in. Okay, and I would just say, more importantly, what we have to do is become politically engaged in this process. I moved back to Iowa almost 6 years ago to stop a factory farm half a mile from my sister's farm. What happened at that time was industrial agriculture had stripped away something called local control, the process by which local elected county officials would have a veto power over the placement of factory farms in that area of the state, in their county. One of the people that helped pass that law and helped broker the deal was a state senator called Tom Vilsack. They did this under Governor Terry Branstad's watch. Terry Branstad is now the current governor, once again, this is his fifth term. The state senator, Tom Vilsack, went on to become a two-term governor here in Iowa. And also, he ran for president briefly, dropped out. He's now our current Secretary of Agriculture. The great problem you have in defeating industrial agriculture, or in now exposing its ills, is the fact that they have all the money. We are up against multi-billion-dollar industries. In 2010, the beef industry alone had retail sales of $77 billion. It's that kind of economic pressure that, nonprofit groups run up against, progressive groups run up against all the time. We can't defeat them through money. We have to win the hearts and minds of the American public. You mentioned Monsanto, and Ronnie outlined Michael Taylor. Michael Taylor is a former Monsanto lawyer. He was a vice president of lobbying for Monsanto. He went into the FDA, and he helped promote a regulation called substantial equivalence, which essentially declared traditionally bred plants the same as plants that are genetically engineered in laboratories that have DNA and viruses inserted into them from other species, something that can never happen in the history of the planet for the last 4-6 billion years that life has existed on the Earth. None of these creations could exist. Now, uniquely, in 1992, Michael Taylor did the bidding of Monsanto and also got that in RBGH, which is recombinant bovine growth hormone, slipped into our food supply. Michael Taylor is a very skilled lawyer. He's a very dedicated bureaucrat for industrial agriculture and for Monsanto's GMOs. Unfortunately, today, Michael Taylor is the second in command at the Obama Food and Drug Administration. So he's a food safety czar at the FDA. Ironically, we're nearly 20 years out from Monsanto having patents on life. And in 1996, they planted their first crop, which was GMO soybeans. Today, farmers in Iowa plant roughly 94% of the soybeans in this state are GMO, roughly 88% of the corn. So what that means is, Monsanto, every time you eat, you drink soda, if you drink, eat a Twinkie or a candy bar, or even if Monsanto owns over 90% of the BT cotton, the genes in the cotton. So every time you put on a piece of cotton clothing that's not organic, you're basically paying a tax to Monsanto. What has their, Monsanto has a very famous public relations arm. Their marketing department should be bronzed. I mean, they're absolutely a master of selling one of the worst products to ever hit the planet, genetically engineered foods, have the least benefits, but they always say, well, we're here to help farmers. It should be better for the environment. We're here to feed the planet. We're here to feed the hungry in the world. The unfortunate truth is whatever Monsanto says, the exact opposite is true. The sad thing is our politicians don't know about it. They don't seem to understand that equation, that part of the equation. One of the reasons is Monsanto, to your average legislator, represents economic development. It recommends, it basically is a cash cow for your state senator or for your elected officials. In the last, since 2000, 50 of the largest agriculture and food companies have donated over $500 million to elected campaign contributions and lobbying expenditures. There's no way that we can compete against that on a level playing field. But really, fundamentally, we founded Food Democracy Now. After Obama was elected, he supported him during the Iowa caucus, supported him during the general election. I actually ran a conference call for farmers in Iowa to support, then Senator Barack Obama during the Iowa caucus. I ran a volunteer office in the last 4 days of the general election. As a former conservative Republican, one of the things I realize is Republicans always have money, but Democrats, we have to show up and use a lot of elbow grease. And that's one of the most important things for grassroots organizing. The only way we're going to win this is by educating people and winning their hearts and minds. And the fact is, we just recently had this scandal with pink slime. Unfortunately, Iowa is like the epicenter for industrial agriculture. And we're the epicenter for this pink slime outbreak. Pink slime, there's one factory here in Waterloo. And there's another one in South Dakota, just across the border. From Iowa. Unfortunately, our governor has taken it upon himself to be a huge pink slime advocate. And last week, he showed up at Iowa State University, which is a land-grant university. Land-grant universities were created under Lincoln in an effort to educate farmers in the latest scientific techniques, tools and techniques to raise food for their families and for the growing nation in America. Tragically, just like our courts, just like our Congress and our federal agencies, our land-grant universities have become captive agents of agribusiness. Today, most universities have Monsanto, a building that either has the name Monsanto on it, or a wing of that building through corporate donations of Monsanto. So, you know, the American people, I think they will wake up. I think they are waking up. And you know, I think we have reached the darkest point. I think the other side is absolutely running scared. You would not have three governors jumping on planes and traveling the small town in South Dakota to defend something called pink slime if they weren't desperate to resuscitate it. You know why they're desperate to resuscitate it? Because the person, Eldon Roth, who owns that company and who patented the process by which you create pink slime, what they euphemistically called lean, finely textured beef, made out of the worst parts of a cow carcass and blended into a centrifuge and then treated with a blast of ammonia. This used to be dog food. Today, for the last 20 years, the American people have just found out that the USDA and the meat industry has been feeding us and our children Alpo. You know, it's an outrage. The funniest thing is, industrial agriculture is their own worst enemy. You know, the ag gag, something like passing the ag gag bills is ultimately a sign of their weakness and ultimately their undoing. And harder they fight on this pink slime, the harder they fight against, you know, labeling the GMOs, the more they're going to expose their corruption to the American people.
Okay, I understand your argument, David, and I certainly respect it. Would you consider this as a part of your argument? All of us are optimistic in that we can cause change or we wouldn't make any effort at all. I'm merely trying to understand why we don't have and never have had a mass outpouring against any travesties in American history. At the height of the Civil Rights Movement, under 1% of African Americans participated in it, their own emancipation. At the height of the feminist movement, under half. At the height of the Vietnam War, when I and many others were out there protesting, the most we ever had was 700,000 at a rally in Washington, D.C. There was 135 million Americans at that time. We were under one half 1%. And yet in each of those instances, change came about because of the empowered minority. But one thing I've learned, I balance my optimism with a pragmatism about who will be the people who will be with us and why, and who will the people who will be indifferent and why, and which politicians or which political processes are likely to succeed and which fail, which people in the media will look at us askance and suggest that we're nothing more than loons, and which will take it seriously, so that at least we make our journey less challenging. Now, that said, take a look at TSA. Remember when the first guy said, don't touch my junk, and then people were offended? Well, I fly a lot. Now I'm driving a lot as my own personal protest. So when sure. I take a look at how long did it take before Americans finally adapted. And now we have a new Supreme Court that allows anyone arrested for anything to be strip searched with complete cavity exposure. We've never had that before. First outrage, then adaptation. We never had, when I was growing up as a baby boomer, never had adult diabetes in children. Now it's at an epidemic level. The numbers of obese and diabetic and heart disease and arthritic suffering children under the age of 10 is higher than it's ever been and higher than any other industrialized nation in the world per population. That's adaptation. So when I look at people who, if you show them pink slime, and if you give them a free order of fries on the side, suddenly the pink slime doesn't seem so bad to them. So it's not that others won't take advantage of that and show that the excesses have occurred, but now we have at least six major executive orders and three major laws, including the National Defense Appropriation Act, which challenge our rights. And now I see that the FDA is raiding with full SWAT teams, with whole groups, including Homeland Security, and you see them, because I have the footage, and it's going in this new film we're doing, and what are they raiding? Why did it take 40 people? Because an Amish farmer was selling some raw milk, or that there was some raw cheese being sold in a food co-op in California, and suddenly the SWAT team comes in. So the militarization of the police, the overextending of anything that's necessary. They could have just had a state health inspector go in and give them an order and confiscate that. But no longer does that work. They're doing this for effect. Because when you see SWAT teams showing up locked and loaded and ready to blow your ass away, if you blink, and they would without hesitating, then suddenly that sends a subconscious message to an awful lot of Americans. If you don't obey, if you don't go along to get along, then you're going to be up against it. We didn't have that in the past. You would have to go back to McCarthyism, or before that to Italy, and in the 1920s to fascism, or in Germany with the Christian Democrat movement, and then Hitler's and his brown shirts. You'd have to see this evolving. And I'm looking at how these movements evolved and how complicit the media was and other organizations were. And I don't see anyone in the rank-and-file corporate Republicans, I don't see anyone in the corporate rank-and-file Democrats and liberals who are opposing genetic engineering, opposing the destruction of the organic movement, opposing the militarization of all things and the evisceration of our constitutional rights. To the contrary, they're complicit in it. And this has not always been the case. So I have to add in to my equations what is necessary for us to do a better job of educating the public about how serious this is, or are, if we don't do a really good job motivating them and educating them, I believe education is crucial, at least to those who are open to the education, then with all of our best efforts, they can expedite through ALEC, and we're exposing ALEC, we're helping lead that charge, and we're having hundreds of thousands of our listeners call the ALEC Corporation sponsors and saying they're boycotting all their products, and 7 or 8 have dropped out as of today. And it's working, but it still doesn't mean because they boycott McDonald's and McDonald's pulls out, or the Gates Foundation pulls out of supporting ALEC, they should be boycotted as individual companies. Forget their association with ALEC. It just means that ALEC no longer will be able to do behind closed doors, right, the state legislators, because they're the ones who are writing the laws. Now, it was mentioned by Ronnie that what's happening in some of these places where you're trying to get some state laws enacted, that's good, and including in Maine and now in Vermont. But state law does not usurp national law. The national law at the end of the day will win, and not the state law. That's the way the game is played at this moment. So would you address this, that we must be very conscious of what we're doing and how clever and brilliant these people are, and Monsanto and DuPont, their connections, how they control so much of the White House, how they control the official arguments. And so rarely is anyone from the alternative position invited in unless it's to defend themselves instead of leading an argument. You don't see the Los Angeles Times, the New York Times, the Washington Post inviting you to give a leading argument why organic is better than genetic. You would be invited in only for a sense of objectivity, if necessary, to defend organic against the onslaught of genetic engineering. And with that genetic engineering, they'll have professors from Harvard and Yale and Stanford and land-based colleges telling the world that genetic is not harmful, that it's better. And then you're invited in without the credentials to try to make a populist position. Because I was on that end for a long time. I know what they're doing. They're very smart. They're very clever. They're very ruthless. And I don't believe for a second that we're in a position of winning yet. Your thoughts?
Well, I certainly agree with you on a lot of those points. One, namely, that this administration, well, since 9/11, since the World Trade Towers were knocked down, since we were attacked, basically, I would agree that there has been a serious erosion of our basic democratic rights. I do have a lot of extreme concern over National Defense, Authorization Act, SOPA and PIPA, and loss of the internet, basic rights and freedoms. Like you mentioned, the recent ruling with the Supreme Court. The fact is, in reality, freedom and democracy has always been and will always be one generation and one vote and one Congress away from extinction. And that is why, I'm a student of history as a history major at Dartmouth College. It's one of the things that I go back to continually, if you don't understand history, you'll never be able to write the future that you want, and you'll never be prepared. They say, you know, if you don't know history, you'll repeat the mistakes of the past. It's only worse than that. It will actually be worse than that, as you've mentioned. The fact is, it has always been a 1% of the population that has won those freedoms. You know, if you want to look at the founding fathers, the American Revolution, they were the 99% to England. They are England's bastard sons. They were the second and third born, fourth born sons. They didn't have a way, they wouldn't have inherited their wealth in England. They had to come over here to get it. Here they were very wealthy. They fought for their rights. They fought for the rights of white land-owning individuals. They didn't fight for life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness for women or for black people. And the fact is, you know, we have these things happening in America, a gradual erosion of our rights because of the alleged fight on terrorism. Well, I mean, we have made remarkable steps. They used to lynch black people down in the South every other day. Today that stopped. Today there's still racism, but there's been improvement. I fundamentally think that, you know, you have to stand up and fight this. You have to expose this. I don't think my enemy is clever. I don't think that he's intelligent. I think they're fearful, and I think they're devious. If they were clever and intelligent, they wouldn't do these things. But they're greedy and devious, and they hunger for power. They want to shut out, you know, the American public from being able to hand those basic freedoms onto the next generation. Really, they just want to steal our wealth. They want to make us serfs again. I do agree with you the fact that it is kind of entertaining when you say that you for years were on that position of being invited to speak only as you know an individual that didn't have quite the PhD level, you know, that a land-grant university professor or a corporate executive had. You know, I've experienced that. I've worked politically here in Iowa. I've gone to the USDA and met with Secretary Vilsack, with a couple farmers. I've done that, you know, several times. And, you know, the question is, I mean, they do not listen to us because we don't have the money. But as soon as we can show up on their doorstep with pitchforks and show that we can be politically viable, they'll start listening to us. The biggest
David,
problem.
Let me interject something there. You've just made a very salient point that we should drive home, and I'm going to invite Ronnie to come back in on this. As most people in the field know, there was recently a lawsuit on behalf of several hundred thousand organic farmers against Monsanto. It was thrown out on a technicality. It is being appealed. What if we had hundreds of thousands of farmers show up in Washington, at the White House, then the Department of Agriculture, demanding change, and then in that process have the largest movement since the 1930s back to Washington to let people know the truth with education, each with different displays, with like we recently did when we were in Washington, where you have one exhibit that talks about that genetically engineered foods promote pesticide resistance, that it increases herbicidal use, that it spreads gene contamination. And then when that gene contaminates an organic farmer's field, the organic farmer is sued, and because a bird carried or the wind carried or a storm carried a genetically engineered seed over to their property, and they're held accountable to that, and that's egregious. Americans would respond to that. Also, genetic engineering expands monoculture and the loss of diversity of heirlooms, which is crucial. It marginalizes alternative farming, and the lobbying and advertising can outspend any competitor. And just to show which legislators receive what amount of money, and then how did they vote for the food safety bill that we were fighting. And then it suppresses research, independent research. And also, there's 255,000 Indian farmers who've committed suicide, many of them using a pesticide, Roundup pesticide, because of the failure of their BT cotton failure, because Monsanto told them how good it would be, and they bought into it, and then they went broke and committed suicide. The largest mass suicide in a country in history I mean, this dwarfs anything we've ever seen before as a suicide, yet not a word in the United States about it. But what if you had the family members, the people, farmers who committed suicide? You don't think that wouldn't resonate? It would. Telling their story, showing film and video of what it was to suffer under Monsanto's delusions. And also the lie, and it's a complete fabricated lie, that genetically engineered food would feed the world's poor. And then you show them pictures of the Mississippi and the dead zone, which is now larger than the state of New Jersey and growing, where nothing can live because of artificial fertilizers and chemicals coming into the Mississippi from the farm and breadbasket going down and polluting. And we've got five of these dead zones, and that's not even the largest one because of industrialized factory farming. So when you start showing the larger picture and you invite these people to Washington, then the media has to cover it. Then suddenly you bring in the people who do have the PhDs. You bring in the environmental economist. You bring in the botanist, the ethnobotanist. You bring in the horticulturalist. You bring in the people who toe-to-toe, head-to-head, intellect-to-intellect, and resume-to-resume can match anyone they can bring in and show that everything they've said is a lie. Then you point out, and you actually have demonstrations against the pimping for, and have a whole movement, pimping for Monsanto or pimping for GMOs. And you show Vilsack, and you show Michael Taylor, and you show Obama. Wasn't it true that Obama, I have his speeches, I have it on record. This man out and out lied about his always going to do this, and he's done nothing to help sustainable agriculture. He's helped them. What would you think of doing something like that? Ronnie Cummings to you, and then David, you'll finish up on it.
Yes, I think we've got to get more militant. We've got to get stronger. We've got to choose our battles very carefully. That's why we all would like to ban genetically engineered food, but we see that the weak spot is labeling. If we can get labeling in California, it'll have the effect of a national law. It'll be a disaster for Monsanto and the rest. But we can't just have electoral campaigns, even if it is a radical ballot initiative campaign. We've got to, as some of our protesters did a few weeks ago, get out in front of the offices of Monsanto and shut them down. And we've got to get in the face of the politicians in Washington, D.C. and across the country. But we can do it. I mean, this California ballot initiative is the first time I can remember where the alternative health movement has come together with the alternative food and farming movement. And, when you see... you've always been out there, Gary, but Natural News, Mercola are right in there now with the organic movement, with the environmental movement, with groups like the American Public Health Association that have endorsed the California ballot initiative. So we got to be stronger. We also realized in California it's not amateur hour. I mean, in order to defeat Monsanto, it's not enough that we've got 80 or 90% of the public saying they support labeling. We are having to raise millions of dollars and raise it the hard way in donations of 20, 30, 40, 50 bucks. But so far we've raised over $2.5 million. We're going to put this on the ballot. We're going to raise $1 million a month for the next 6 months the hard way with 100 groups reaching out to the grassroots, and we're going to beat them. And I think that a major victory over a bully corporation like Monsanto is going to give people some confidence that we can fight the even bigger battles that are coming down the road.
Okay.
So
when is that coming up for a vote?
November 6th. It'll be, the national election day.
Here's what I'm going to do to help the cause. I will have a new documentary on genetic engineering done by September. I know that Roy of Hollywood on KPFK and I have done a show together for 6 hours every Wednesday for 29 years. We will encourage and try to motivate Pacifica on KPFA in Berkeley and KPFK in Los Angeles to do a station-wide and a foundation-wide promotion to join this cause to help bring all of its listeners and activists in on this. And then we will come out there and we will help, put our shoulders against the wall in any demonstrations and acts of civil disobedience and go door to door if necessary and enlist the tens of thousands of people in my audience on KPFK so we can get the public educated. You give us the materials on your end, we will distribute them, we'll get people out, we'll make this a focused on all of our parts, and because you're all leading this effort, we will defer to you. You can just consider us resources to help you in this larger cause. Ronnie?
Great. So we can add you as an official endorser of the California Ballot Initiative for labeling genetically engineered food.
Yes, and we will use my radio show on KPFK in Los Angeles to educate as many people who are not fully familiar and get these people out and get these people, each one, becoming advocates and becoming a part of the movement as well. Yes, we are 100% on your side. It is a time for working together, cooperation, going forward on issues, something that unfortunately many progressives have not done and must do. And David, final thoughts from you, please.
Sure, absolutely. One of the things is you were talking about why haven't these efforts succeeded to this point. And I would say fundamentally, from my perspective as a former conservative and now progressive Democrat, that's one of the things I see is a progressive community fighting amongst itself for the scarcity of resources. But I think, the odds are so great that we are actually overcoming that and joining together. That's why we're, Food Democracy Now is sitting down with Organic Industry, Organic Consumers Association, Mercola, and everyone. We need everyone at the table to fight Monsanto and to fight the bullies of the biotech industry. You mentioned real briefly the lawsuit of organic farmers against Monsanto. Food Democracy Now is the plaintiff in that lawsuit. It's called Organic Seed Growers and Trade Association versus Monsanto. We are using every tool in the toolbox to expose this corruption. We had a farmers march with Occupy Wall Street in December. On January 31st, the day of our court case for oral arguments against Monsanto, we were there with farmers, with 50 of the farmers that are in the lawsuit, and we showed up and had a rally with Occupy Wall Street. So the thing is, millions of Americans are learning about this, and they're outraged, and they're taking action. The California Ballot Initiative is a very important step in winning that battle. Ronnie knows very well the battle that's going on in Vermont, the Vermont state legislature, where actually the governor is afraid right now that he's going to be sued by Monsanto. We cannot allow our politicians to fold to corporate power. We fundamentally believe, and we're excited to be joining hands arm in arm with everyone at this table, but it's going to take a group effort, and it's a big struggle.
Well, I agree. We're out of time, gentlemen, but here's a good parting thought. As of today, there are 49% of all registered voters are now independent. These individuals historically would have been either your rank-and-file card-carrying liberal or Democrat and or conservative and Republican. Today, they are neither. They realize that the ideologies and the ideologues have misaligned themselves with their authentic needs. That means we simply have to organize. If we're able to organize, keep the egos at the door, work for common good, and push forward, we will see major advances because we are more than they. We just haven't been organized as they are, and we don't have the money they have, but we have the money to boycott them, and that's important as well. We will continue to offer our internet, our progressive radio network, which has more people coming to it than any other internet radio station, and thousands and thousands and tens of thousands of people a day. We'll put up every article on genetic engineering, films, and motions and calls to actions. It's a forum open to both of you and all other people in the field, so please use it because you'll be able to reach people that you didn't know existed, and they will now know that you exist. So I thank you both, Ronnie Cummings and David Murphy, for all your good work.
And thanks so much.
Gary.
I'm Gary Nall. We're out of time.